Welcome to Things I Wish I Knew, the podcast from Thinking Faith, a work of the Jesuits in Britain. I'm Julia, I'm in my early 30s and I used to live in a Jesuit young adult community. We all live hectic lives and often don't get time to reflect on what's happening both to us and around us. This podcast is meant to help you to take a moment to stop and think about where you are, where you're going, and where your relationship with God fits into it all. Every week I meet a new guest who tells me about something they experienced which changed their life forever. By talking about the things they wish they'd known, we'll explore the idea that God is in all things. And we'll talk about the part that faith plays in navigating life's challenges. Today I'm speaking to Sarah, who is married to James and has been for over 30 years. She's been involved in youth work and now works for the Catholic charity, the SVP. In this conversation, we speak about her experience of marriage and how her and her husband have grown together. I love speaking to her about how her and her husband have inspired me, and particularly in the way they've built their marriage together. So, Sarah, how did you know marriage was right for you?
In all honesty, I don't remember thinking of anything else. I got married when I was 22, and I knew I wanted to be a family person. I came from a loving family. Mum and dad were in many ways a great example of marriage. And it wasn't even something that I didn't think about, if you know what I mean. It had been there since as early as I can remember. I always believed I would be part of a family. And for me, family was part of being married.
So how did you meet James and how did you know he was the one?
Oh, goodness me. I met James when we were 10 years old. Well, I was 10 and he was 11. And we met at a junior sports day that was run by the diocese. I went because his best friend was in my parish. He invited me to come along, and that's how I met James. We were then, from that point on, in the same group of friends, really. We went to youth club together. We went to Lourdes together. We just were in each other's lives for as long as I can actually remember. I'm not great at remembering before I was 10. So that's how I met him. What was the second part of the question?
How did you know he was the one, or when did you know
he was the one? How did I know he was the one? I knew really early. And in fact, I think I knew before we were even going out. In fact, there was a sort of point at which he was going out with friends of mine and I was going out with friends of his. I think we were sort of avoiding getting to that point too quickly. We share so much in terms of values, love of family, faith. Passion for working with young people is a really, really strong value that we both share. So I think we knew very, very early on. And in fact, when we did start going out, he asked me to marry him 4 days after I started going out with him, which is slightly random. And people would think, what? So we didn't share that with everyone at the time. But yeah, it was, to me, it'd been there a long time and no regrets.
Well, that's really good. So I'm getting married. And I think my biggest question to anyone who's already married is, when did it feel real that you were getting married?
Okay, so I was 22 when I was getting married. And if I'm honest, the preparation we had from the church was really poor. We were sent on this marriage preparation weekend. And to say it was the closest thing to experiencing being in prison, that's slightly pushing it. However, we were amongst about 50 couples. They told us to just talk to one another. Now, all these people were getting married and all you want to do is talk about your plans and what you're doing. But they were saying, no, just talk to one another, etc. And they gave us a book each and they asked us questions and we were supposed to go away and write our answer and then swap. And that was the sort of format of it. But when you've known each other since you're 10 years old and they say, write about who your family are, you think, who's getting married that doesn't know who the other one's family is, you know? So there was a lot of that which was really tough for us. And Julia will appreciate this because this is my husband's sense of humour. In the very final question, and I can't remember what it was, I opened the book and it said, I'm a little teapot, short and stout. And I thought, oh, we've reached that point. So, yeah, marriage prep, not great. Also, we were both young, involved Catholics, and there was this issue of putting us on a pedestal, just presuming we'd know stuff and presuming that we'd be okay. I think, if I'm honest, the marriage became real when we got back from honeymoon. That sounds bonkers. Like, how can you not think about the marriage? But you're so focused and wrapped up in the wedding. And I wasn't mature enough to go, I've got to think about this. I've got to be ahead of myself. I was just led by the heart. I knew this was the right person for me. So we went on honeymoon, and because we'd not lived together beforehand, my parents moved all my stuff. And I can't tell you how odd it is to come back from a holiday and to suddenly everything's moved. There's a house there ready for you that you didn't even take your own stuff into. Your name has changed. And it was a bit of a mind melt, you know, not the marriage, but so much of the stuff around it. So yeah, when I came back from the honeymoon, that was when the marriage started. So yeah, not always the best way to start, and it's not what I'd recommend people do.
And I was talking to a friend recently about this, and I'm not living with my future husband until after we're married. We've gone quite traditional in that way. But I suppose when you got married 30 plus years ago, that was the expected thing
Absolutely,
to do.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so in some ways, when you get married, your whole life changes. Like you've just said about your name changes, which it doesn't happen for the man, but we don't have to go into that. But you moved house, your whole like way of life changes in some ways.
Yes, in some ways your identity feels removed. So I had a very Irish maiden name and I moved to quite an English surname, which I thought at the time would be great because I wouldn't have to spell it out for everybody. But you can't imagine the amount of ways that people spell the surname Barbara or the amount of times I get called Barbara. So, you know, it was great thinking that that would be a good plan. Yeah, you're right. Identity shifts and it takes some getting used to. And I think we were both in that situation. When I look at it, we both knew we wanted to be together. There wasn't really ever a point at which that wasn't a question. But there were times when it was difficult. And actually, if I'm talking to someone, and I was saying to you earlier, I'm really privileged to speak to you in the month that you're getting married. I feel like, you know, it's great that we're able to have this conversation. Because actually the worst thing that ever happened in my marriage was the best thing that ever happened in my marriage. So we got to a point which was dreadful, you know, and at one point I did say, get me out of this. You know, it was a real terrible moment. It was probably the worst moment of my life, but it was the best moment. And I'm very grateful that it happened. Didn't want to go through it at the time. But James wasn't happy in his work. And I was getting promoted and my life was going in a certain direction and he felt stuck and I wasn't noticing that. And this happened really early in our marriage, in the first 2 years. And I stopped noticing his needs and was wrapped up in work and really had a sort of very immature view of where we were at. You know, we've got our house, we've got jobs, aren't we lucky? Isn't everything fine? Actually, it wasn't fine. And James was really not in a great place. And I was oblivious. I was selfish. And I reached out to my mum. Now, my mum's a bit of a Victorian, you know, parenting upbringing, whatever. But by God, she was solid. She was brilliant. And she didn't blame James. That was the critical. That was, had she gone into, I protect my daughter, I love my daughter, and you've hurt her, it would have been disastrous. And what she said was brilliant. She said, you need help. And she found help. So we went to, I don't know what they're called anymore, but it was Catholic marriage advice, essentially, a counsellor who helped us to listen to one another. And what came out of that was that James wanted to be a teacher, something I had no clue about. And he didn't even have the right qualifications to get into teaching. And my mind was blown because I was thinking, he's going to be a student. We're going to have to live in student digs. How is this going to work? So my world was blown to pieces. But because we'd hit rock bottom, we got to that place where it was like, how is this going to last? I was more prepared to take the gamble. But it moved us into a totally different place. And it was a place that was really blessed. We were able to recognise that having got married at 22 didn't mean to say we had to become middle-aged. And I think I'd almost gone to that place. I'd almost gone, right, this is settled, this is sorted. And actually we rediscovered being young. So he was at university, I was working, but we both partied together. I created a life there that wasn't entirely wrapped up in his, so that he had some freedoms as well as being a student. And yeah, it was fantastic. It was like starting again. So I would say to anyone getting married, if something feels like your worst moment, don't stay in that. Recognize that that could transform. And don't be scared to ask for help, because I think that's the thing. You need allies and you need people who you can go to, who you believe won't judge the other person. So, you know, find your allies. I hope I can be that to you if ever you need it.
I look forward to it. I was just kind of laughing to myself because I've only ever known James as a teacher and I couldn't imagine him being anything other than a teacher. So when you said about it surprised you, I was like, wow.
I guess that's the thing about marriage that I'd also say is that the person you marry, they're not going to be that person for the rest of their life. You know, actually you're marrying their future, you're marrying who they become. And that's putting a lot of trust in someone, really. And the reason I didn't see James in that light was because I think initially James didn't see himself in that light. I think he didn't have, as I say, the qualification to go into teaching. He had a well-paid job, but he wasn't enjoying it. And suddenly there had been this, we had always both shared the passion, as I say, for working with young people and seeing them achieve their best. And we were both doing that through our youth work together. So I didn't see the teaching thing coming in, but thank God it did, because as you say, he's been a teacher now for many years. And it's one of the things I'm really, really proud about for him. He's a great teacher.
So how do you grow wisely together?
Oof, how do we grow wisely together? That well, presumes generally. That we're wise. generally, how do we grow together? I think faith is important to us. Don't want to give anyone the impression that we're regularly praying on our knees at home. Maybe we should do more of that. I have great admiration for those who do. But we've been steadfast in terms of we go to Sunday Mass together. We have both worked in Catholic settings. We spend a lot of our time talking about church politics, and we really care deeply about the church and unity and all sorts of things that we really desire for the church. So faith has been really important. Interestingly, I was having a conversation with my daughter who doesn't go to church currently, and she's going to become a mum in December. And she's very grateful for the foundation she has. And she's lovely because she says that to me now. And there were times when that wasn't going to be the case. You know, it was like, oh, I'm never going to be like you. And now she's very like me, you know, almost more than me, if you know what I mean. So she's like, I'm not going to have my children on screens all the time. I'm going to be strict and they're going to have good foundations and boundaries. But I said to her, you know, what you're not recognizing is that the foundation of all of your upbringing was our faith. And I know you're struggling with that at the moment. I know it's not the important thing for you and that this is your life, not mine. But I do have to tell you that that was underneath everything. And when you say, how did we grow together? That's James and I. Faith was at the heart. It's part of who we are. It's not extra to our lives. It's just there. And as I say, it's not always as visible maybe to people as it should be. But that's how we grow. I think we've got things that we recognise about one another. So we both do very extrovert jobs, but as we've got older, we've become very introverted. So we're a bit hermit-like, and we love nothing more than to go home, close the door and not let anybody in, and just be together. And that growing old together is actually, it's just such a blessing, because when I was younger, I didn't always have that confidence that we would grow together. I knew he'd committed to marriage for life as I had, but comparison of other people's marriages, jealousy, things that come in and they can destroy. I didn't always have that confidence, and it's lovely to be 34 years married, to be able to go home and just be with each other and close a door and have no one else around. So yeah, we've grown, we've changed, and yeah, faith is there always.
So you were just saying about comparison.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's quite easy to compare like your life as whether you're married or not mm-hmm. to someone else.
Yeah.
But I imagine in marriage that makes it like even harder when you see other people married and you think they're the perfect couple. That's what we should be like.
Yeah. Also, you come from a family and both of us come from families where our parents had strong marriages. And you look to their marriages and you say, that's what marriage looks like. Because that's your really your only honest experience of marriage. And my dad, my mum says, oh, your dad ruins things for all other men. In as much as he was a Friday evening, buy chocolate, buy flowers every week. He was a Christmas, here's your slippers and there's tickets for Paris inside. And he was a real romantic. I know, it's just unfair, isn't it? He, in many ways, he was fantastic. James is not a romantic. And so I had to learn that hearts and flowers isn't real marriage. You know, that's not a measure of marriage. And one of the biggest compliments I've ever had on my marriage came from you. I was rushing around, organising things at an event, as often I do, usually losing my phone somewhere, etc. But when James is there, I go, where's my phone? And it's there. He's got it. He's put it in his pocket because he knows I lose it. He comes over with a bottle of water because he says, you haven't drunk enough yet. And he makes sure I've got some food. And you said, I need to get me a James. And I just thought, thank you, Julia, because that was such a compliment. And as I say, comparison, even at this age, you can look at other people and you can say, we're a bit odd. We're not quite where we should be. You know, are we doing all the things that we should be? So when you gave me a compliment, it really made me feel, actually, somebody has seen this. And I don't think everyone does. So thank you for that.
That's all right. I will say that raised my bar of my standard of men that day. I was
very pleased.
I was just like, I need, because I think I'm probably very similar to you when at work events. I'll go into, because that event was Flame, which is where you have 10,000 young people. And we were running sessions where we were responsible for about 40 volunteers. And so I think both of us had gone into that mindset of like, okay, we need to make sure the volunteers are happy and comfortable. And so we were doing something for someone else. And then he came and did that for you. And I was like, that's what I need as well in my life.
Yeah. No, he looks after me very well.
Yeah.
He's the cook. So I never cook. Something to do with him not eating my food as well. But he is the cook. And he will come out at midnight and pick me up somewhere. He will make sure that I'm always driven to the station in the mornings and things like that. They're not big, huge, visible signs. They're not hearts and roses by any means. But actually, they're really solid. They're really generous. And I've grown more grateful as I've got older for those things that really, to me, are true signs of love.
I guess it comes also down to love languages as well. So yeah. It's like the five love languages are words of affirmation, quality time, physical touch, acts of service, and gift giving.
Yeah.
And so it sounds like when you were comparing to your mum and your dad, the love language there was the gift giving.
Yes.
Where your love language, or at least in this moment, is the acts of service.
Yes.
That James is showing his love to you by the acts of service and you're appreciating
definitely them. And I think I'm a natural exhorter, so my words of affirmation I think are the way I show love, and I think also turning up for people, you know, I was saying earlier, you know, you only have to ask and I'll be there. That is how I show that I care about people, and James knows that anything, whenever, I'll be there. I have done more careers talks in his schools. I have done more turning up and going to netball matches and supporting teams that I've never met before. I've been to dance shows, etc. He knows I'll always turn up. So, I think that's part of how I show love as well.
One of the things I've learned as we're preparing for marriage is how you've got to learn what the other person's love language is.
Yeah.
And show, because that the easiest thing for us to do is to show love the way that we like to receive love. But that doesn't mean our partner will always appreciate the way that you show love.
Yeah.
Because they might like to receive it in a different way. And so I guess with that learning, I've learned in some ways I need to not think so much of myself, but think of my partner. And I'm guessing that's even more so in marriage.
Yeah. I guess it's that sense of self-sacrifice in some ways. I don't like the word sacrifice because that feels like it's a pain in some way. I don't find it painful to be sacrificial for James, you know, and do things for him. That's what I want to do. But yes, you're right. You have to learn that. And you learn that as you grow together, you learn more about those things that matter to the other person. So initially I was all about big gifts and big birthday celebrations. My family will tell you that I'm all about the celebration. I'm all about the event. That's not James. That's just not James. To the point that we're talking about, well, next year on his birthday, we'll just walk past it. You know, we'll go out for dinner, but we're not going to make a big deal because actually he doesn't enjoy it. You know, so I'm still learning and still shooting myself in the foot on occasions, you know. We still learn. And just because I love an event doesn't mean to say he does. And just because I want everybody around me doesn't mean to say that that's his thing. You learn. And as I say, sacrifice feels like it's painful. I don't find it painful. I want to do it. That's what I would say.
I'm just thinking that's really beautiful that after 30 plus years of marriage, you're still learning about each other.
Oh, gosh, yeah, because we keep changing, you know. We're just about to go into another stage of life, you know, being grandparents, very excited. Everybody in my life knows that we're going to be grandparents. But even that is learning about one another. I know he'll be a brilliant granddad or grandpa or whatever he chooses to be called. At the moment, we're getting G-Dog and that is not happening. But that's James's sense of humour. He won't let you, you know, he's not going to tell you until the child arrives what he's going to be called. That's fine. Whereas I've always known I will be Gran. I'm a fourth generation Gran. We're learning, finding where we're at. I love watching him working with children. We do a summer camp every year. And actually, that week is really special to me because it's the week that I remember what I fell in love with. Getting a bit choked. But actually watching him at his absolute best, and I know with a grandchild, he'll be just that person. Unfortunately, it means that Gran will be the boring, sensible one. My daughter keeps sending me videos of little babies running toward their grandma and then running round them to get to granddad. Saying, that's your life. So, you know, we pretty much know where it's going, but it will be interesting. We're absolutely still growing and encountering different stages of life.
I was just thinking, my parents, so both my brothers have children, and it's quite interesting seeing them be grandparents to my nephews rather than being parents to me and my brothers, because they are so different. Things we would never have got away with.
I'm really looking forward to that.
They just let it go now. I guess that's just to say that you'll be different as grandparents as parents.
It's interesting, you know, we grow with each other, but we're also growing with our children who are changing. And just watching my daughter go through becoming a mum, she's changed, you know, and I'm loving it. We're very close. And I feel closer now to her as this is going on. Mm-hmm. We're both, I think that was the other thing right from the beginning, James and I were always going to be family people. And I guess if you asked either of us what's our greatest achievement in life, it would be our children. So everybody gets very bored. I talk about them a lot.
No one gets bored of hearing about them. Is there anything you wish you'd done differently?
Oh, gosh. No. I think, if I'm honest, whilst I was in it, whilst I was in the painful times, the times when I was jealous, the times when I was comparing, I'd love to have not been in those times because it's painful. But now, no, I wouldn't change it. We're where we are because of those things. And whilst I'm saying, you know, it's lovely, we're learning about each other through change, about becoming grandparents and things, I'm also really intensely aware of the fact that we've got aging parents. My dad died, sadly, when he was 61. So mum was a widow at my age. And so we've both got to encounter, we know that there's going to be those issues in life as well. So you don't wish them, but you encounter them and you grow together. James was incredible during the time my dad was dying, was brilliant, you know, in the way he allows me to support mum now. And I think it's never finished, that growing together, because you don't know what that person's going to become through an experience. So, but I'm confident in it in a way that I wasn't when I was younger. So no, I wouldn't change anything. In the moments, I probably would have.
How do you get through the hard times together?
I think knowing how to respond to whatever the situation is, because you know the other. So one of the hard times, I was doing my master's just during the time my dad was dying. And it's one of the very few times James has really shouted at me, because I just went, I'm not going to the library today. I can't do this. This is not, you know, this is not going to work. And he knew, and I don't know how he knew, but this was the time to go, get yourself out of here. This is now getting silly. You can do this, you know, and really gave me a talking to in the way that he is not naturally given to. But it got me out the door. But then when Dad was dying, he was just sat next to me holding my hand. So how do you get through the hard times? I guess loving each other, knowing each other, and being prepared to do what the other one needs.
So what have been the joys?
Without doubt, having our children. That's been the most joyous thing. And supporting each other through work, seeing, we're really blessed. Both of us are youth workers. He's a teacher, but he's a youth worker at heart who does teaching. Seeing the seeds that we've been part of planting grow and develop. You know, it's not credit to us or anything that these people that we've worked with are amazing, and some of them do incredible things. But it's a joy. It's a real joy to have been part of that journey. And we've done a lot of that together. We've been catechists together for confirmation. We've worked for Brentwood Catholic Youth Service and volunteered for them. And both of us worked at one stage or another for the youth service. But even, you know, his pupils that he comes home and tells me about, you know, when he comes and tells me they've done this or that or the other, they're the real joys. You know, it's where we both shine and where we both have that shared love for the work. But children, our children, beyond everything, that would be what we would say.
So what do you wish you knew before you'd got married?
Okay, so there's help, and you can ask for help, and it's a good thing to ask for help. I'm a real advocate for counselling, because sometimes you need somebody external who's objective to be able to help you get to that understanding of where the other is. I wish I'd known that it's okay to ask for help. I was saying earlier that part of our marriage prep was really very much given to the fact that two young Catholics getting married, people put us on a pedestal. Oh, isn't it wonderful? Isn't it lovely? And that meant we had harder to fall and higher to fall, if you know what I mean, when things went really badly wrong. And we had to hide it, because our marriage had been really public, and our failure felt like we couldn't be ourselves in that situation. So I wish I'd known it's okay to ask for help. It doesn't matter what everybody else is thinking, or that shouldn't be your guiding thing. And comparison's a killer. There are different ways of showing love than just hearts and flowers. I think they're the things that I wish I'd known.
And what are you most grateful for?
I'm most grateful for James, without question. I'm grateful to be in my 50s, married to someone I love, having two children I'm proud of. And yeah, I'm grateful that through this, James has always been there, you know, in church beside me every Sunday. That really mattered too. And yeah, I'm grateful for the lives we've had, for the jobs we do. I'm grateful for the failures we've had as well, because as I said before, it was in that failing and in that falling that we got to the best place we could be.
Thanks for listening to Things I Wish I Knew. As I prepare to get married, I know this episode is going to stay with me, especially in how to get through the harder times. How about you? We'd love to hear how Sarah's story resonated with you. And why not also tell us if you're facing an experience you wish you knew how to look at differently? It might just be something we can help with. You can find out more about this and other themes at thinkingfaith.org. Thank you again for listening. I hope you'll join me again next time on Things I Wish I Knew.